Welcome to Babbittville Radio, a place where you'll hear great conversations with the world's best and most inspirational runners, triathletes, and cyclists. Endurance lives here. Now, here's your host, USA Triathlon and Ironman Triathlon Hall of Famer, Bob Babbitt.
204.58, the fastest ever marathon for an American in history this week at Boston. Mr. Ryan Hall joins us. Ryan, how the heck are you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you guys? Thanks for having me on the show.
Ryan, it's we had you on, let's see, when you went 59.43.
Which was pretty good,
I must say. Yeah, yeah, and 206.17.
Not too bad.
Won the Olympic trials.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And now, listen, 204.58, did you – it's funny because I remember one time we were chatting, and you know, it's like, how fast can you go, Ryan? And you were like, well, you know what? I've run 59.43. In my mind, that seemed easy, and on the right day, why can't I string two of those together? Is that realistic? Is that something that, you know, you felt 206.17 was something you could go faster than?
Yeah, definitely. I knew I could go faster. I just felt like it was kind of a matter of time and the right circumstances and the right training clicking together and just feeling good on the day. But that's kind of the fun thing I think about having the faith that I do. Is I just, every time I step to the line, I believe anything is possible. And but at the same time, like, I won't lie, I was kind of surprised when I was seeing some of those splits out there on Monday. But that's I think the beginning of a breakthrough that's coming for me then, and who knows what it'll lead to.
Did you notice the tailwind? I mean, was it noticeably warm for you guys as you were running?
You know, at one point in the race I did notice being a little bit warm, but it was obviously a good, great day to run, and there obviously was a bit of a tailwind. The way I like to think about it is like, well, the tailwind, it just evened out the course, so it was took those hills of Newton out of there for us or something like that. But it was funny because I was running, and partway through the race, some guy was yelling at me on the side of the road, and he was like, don't let them steal your wind, Ryan, because I was, like, in the lead, and they were sitting right behind me. And so I kind of looked back, and I was like, yeah, they're stealing my wind. I was like, I wonder if that actually happens or not.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Like, it's like you're sailing. I didn't even think about that. That's a great point.
I know. So I was thinking I should, like, file a protest or something like that.
you know what else is interesting, Ryan? A lot of guys before major races get into such a cocoon, and they're inside their own head, and you don't see them react to the crowd or anything like that, but because they don't want to give away any energy. But there's something about Boston when they introduce you, or when you guys go to the starting line, don't you walk like right through a tunnel of all the athletes to the starting line, and the energy's got to be off the charts.
Oh yeah, it's awesome. And yeah, most people don't even tap into that. And I don't know what caused me to get outside the mold, but that is one of my highlights of the entire Boston Marathon experience. Is, you know, they keep us in this church, and then we have to walk through. They basically part the masses for us so we can make our way to the starting line. And I just go crazy when I go through that tunnel that they make for us, because the runners, they're amped up. They want to be fired up about something, but most of the runners just kind of jog through and, you know, don't even acknowledge the crowd. But I was hopefully giving them something to, you know, like giving them some energy, and they were certainly giving me some, because I went straight from there to do this TV interview, and I was like breathing all hard, and I was all fired up. I was like, man, I didn't even need to warm up. All I have to do is walk to the starting line.
How did you feel coming into this event? I mean, a lot of runners will talk about their preparation and feeling unbelievably strong and not racing as well as they felt like their training had gone, and others will say, God, you know, I had a lot of hiccups in my training, and yet I had this miracle performance. I mean, was yours, your training was in line with your performance?
I had a very, very rocky winter, just trying to get healthy. I had this parasite I was trying to get rid of, and it was not a fun process. Like, I almost felt like I was, and I can sympathize with all the ladies out there, because I felt like I was pregnant or something, because in some ways, because I was super bloated all the time, but also because, like, I was getting morning sickness.
Really?
Like, almost, Yeah, it was terrible. I'd wake up, I'd have breakfast, I'd get sick, and I would be in bed all day, and then Sarah would drag me out of bed and make me go for an afternoon run. And this happened for, you know, like a week straight, and it wasn't that long. It was in, like, February. So I was actually looking at, back over my entire training log last night. I read, like, the whole thing just to get an overview of what transpired, and things just really came together actually after the New York City Marathon. I had some solid training efforts, you know, and gotten in some big workouts, but nothing all that speedy. So I was hitting it, but I wouldn't say in top form. And then that last month, all of a sudden my body came around and I started feeling really good, and my workouts got really good. And I came down to sea level, and they just got better and better. And I was feeling like $1 million going into the race, like jogging the day before. I knew that something special could happen on Monday.
Now, where did this parasite come
from? Yeah, what was it?
Some travel?
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's from the tacos in San Diego or something like that. No,
it was from that dinner.
From Endurance Live. Thanks, Huddle. Yeah. Nice at the Hard
Rock.
So
what was it? Did you get it diagnosed? Was it Giardia or?
No, it was blastocyst hominis.
What the heck is that?
Wow. Whoa.
That's
yeah.
So it wasn't from travel, though.
Did you have to go on a course of antibiotics and all that?
Yeah, exactly. I had to do it a couple times because we did it the first time, and I killed most of it, and then we had to do it again, and I was like, oh, no, this is going to be terrible, and it was bad, and I tried a number of other things to try and get rid of it, like Chinese herbs and stuff like that, and basically, there's no way around it. Like, you got to totally clear out your gut, which is not a fun process.
Oof. Yeah, because when you're on that, too, your training really suffers. You know, people think, oh, you're just on an antibiotic, but if you're on something like Flagyl or one of the ones for parasites, that can really knock you out.
Yeah, like I was in Boston after I ran the half marathon in January, the Houston half, and I checked out the trials course, and I was wanting to do some workouts on the course, and is in Boston, Sarah's racing there, and I went out to the hills in Newton, and there's a whole bunch of people out there training on the hills, and I really was looking forward to this workout, and I did one rep up the hills, and I was going to do like 3 hard reps, and I ended up just like jogging up the hill, and I had to get back in the car and call it a day. And there was quite a number of days like that, or at least a lot of days that weren't very much fun, where I just had to kind of grit my teeth and bear it. So I was glad to get through that and be in the clear kind of that last, really it was like the last 6 to 8 weeks where I finally got totally healthy.
You know, it's interesting, Ryan. We've seen it in not just running, but in triathlon as well. Sometimes when you have stuff like that and you've got a month where you're sort of forced to do less than you want to do, then you don't peak too early. And then all of a sudden, you know, you've got that last minute or last month cramming deal, and you perform really, really well. I mean, looking back, obviously you don't want to go through something like that, but maybe it kept you from running too many miles going in and being a little toasted.
Yeah, certainly, and that's something I even knew going into this whole training block, you know, after overtraining going into Chicago, and really kind of been borderline overtrained for a very long time.
Yeah.
I knew that I needed to make rest a big component of my buildup, and it was even a bigger component than I thought it was going to be with my health issues. I've seen that time and time again, too. I believe, like, the duel in the sun with Dick Beardsley and Alberto Salazar, I think Dick had a lot of little hiccups in his training, and then same deal, he said he just felt phenomenal going into the race and had a great day. So I think it just goes to show that it's certainly better to be undertrained than overtrained.
Yeah, that's definitely the case.
So, Ryan, I know you're on Twitter. I follow you on Twitter, and I put out thing out there today. Yeah, everybody does,
of
right?
Course,
I mean,
Huddle.
It's Ryan Hall. I put out a little thing. I said, hey, we're going to be talking to Ryan Hall. How about some questions? And somebody had a great question, because I think we all look at this when we see you on television running with these guys. And I had the pleasure of sitting next to you at our table at Endurance Live. I'm going, this guy's tiny. And then you see you on TV, and it's like, oh my God, that dude is really bulked up. Look at him, he's huge. But you, do you feel big among
all the Kenyan guys?
Among the Kenyans and
you're
the Ethiopians? You look like, yeah, you look like a Jolly Green Giant out there. You're like, what a great draft.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't really think about that too much. Like, I just know what works for me, and I know I just have to pay attention to what I'm doing and, you know, not try and be a Kenyan. You know, I respect the Kenyans. I've learned from their training and stuff, but I know that the best version of me is what I need to be out there. So, yeah, you know, I could definitely stick out a little bit, but it's all good. Yeah, that's why I had to shave my head this year, so that at least not have this big old mop blowing around and make me look even more out of place out there.
when did you lose the beard? Because I loved that look. I thought, absolutely. Look, I got Ted Kaczynski at the table, Babbitt. Who is that you put me
exactly.
with? He's like, oh, that's Ryan Hall. I'm like, really?
Yeah, I shaved it the night before the Houston half. Yeah, I was debating about keeping it all the way till Boston. It would have been epic if I could have done that. But
Sarah would have moved out, probably.
Too much for me to bear.
What did Sarah think of it?
She liked it, but she thought it was getting a little bit out of hand. And once it started to get warm, and we were like, yeah, that's when I had to take it down.
Did you go ahead and get a driver's license photo with it? So you look like the serial killer shot out of here.
Yeah, it's good. For going through airports, it's
good.
Yes,
yes.
Yeah, I have an awesome driver's license shot, actually, of it. And the great thing is it's an Arizona driver's license, so it doesn't expire until 2047.
Nice!
Does it really?
So I used it the first time I tried to use it flying out of Flagstaff.
Yeah.
And the guy told me, he's like, you should really go get a new photograph. This doesn't look anything like you. And I was like, I just got this.
That is hilarious. Ryan, last year you spent a ton of time in Boston before the race, right? I mean, you were there, you did some trips there, and then, I, if I'm not mistaken, you were there for a few weeks leading in. Did that help you this year, just your knowledge of the course?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, being out there last year for 3 weeks before and just all the time I spent in Boston combined, it's like a home course for me now.
Yeah.
You know, I know exactly how it rolls. I know where I can rest, where I need to, where I can work the hills. And just knowing, like, even the environment, like, what to expect and what you're going to be seeing. And just to feel, I just felt, like, super comfortable out there. And then, obviously, it helps having, you know, a packed course all along the way with them just going crazy for USA or, you know, cheering for me. Like, it definitely feels like I'm racing in my backyard.
Do you guys hold back in that first whatever it is 8-10 miles? I mean, there's so much downhill in that course from the start. Is it hard, and do you feel like you're going to pay later on because, you know, you guys are running 4:30s right off the bat?
You know, I don't. It's funny because, like, in years past, I've done all these downhill runs and uphill runs and just tons of, like, crazy workouts like that where you're just bombing downhill for 6 miles or 8 miles or whatever, or you're going straight uphill for 6 miles. And I didn't do any of that before this Boston, just because after being out there and knowing the course, it really is much more of a just kind of a rolly course than a huge drop. You know, like, it doesn't even feel like I'm really going downhill in that first 6 miles. And really, that's when you lose all the elevation if you look at the profile of it. It's in that first 10K. And then you go up the hills of Newton, you come back down the hills of Newton. Really, a lot of it's in that first half of a mile where you drop pretty significantly. But even then, everyone talks about how fast the first mile is, and it is quick. But then you go down for like a K, and then you come back up for 600 meters. So, you have to use the hills, the downhills. Like, you got to take that as free time. That's kind of how I look at it. It's like, this is the time for me to get some quick splits under my belt and essentially bag some time so that when I hit those hills and I have to run a couple 5-minute miles, I'm not losing a
right.
ton of time on my overall average.
So in the past, I think when you've heard the splits, it's easy to get intimidated by those splits and go, oh, my God, I better slow down. This time it seemed like you were welcoming the splits and didn't have a problem. Whatever the time they're going to tell you, that was fine, then you're just going to focus on the next mile.
Yeah, it wasn't quite as I'm aware as I was last year. I was more just aware of how I was feeling and what felt comfortable. And there was a couple of moments when I was thinking, like, wow, I really don't want to screw this up and run, like, 6 minutes for my last couple of miles. That's never happened to me in a marathon. So I just wanted to be as aggressive as I could. So it was kind of crazy, you know, rolling through the halfway mark and under world record pace. And at that point, I was just thinking, man, like, we are going to run really quick today. And, yeah, it ended up even quicker than I thought it was going to be.
How do you feel about that? There was a lot of talk after that event that, you know, it's not a world record because it doesn't adhere to the rules and the standards that you need to have a world record. But Boston is not traditionally the fastest marathon.
Never.
It's just you got conditions that allowed it to be so. How do you feel about it?
Yeah, like, I mean, I haven't honestly, like, been too caught up in that. Seen a lot of posts on it on Twitter and stuff. I think there was a post even yesterday saying that it was, like, not aided or something like that, not sufficiently aided. Should be a world record, but I don't know. Like, I'll leave that to experts and speculation, and ultimately, like, we don't know, you know. Like,
right.
I knew that that course had potential to run quick. I never thought it would run that quick. And so on the day, you're just kind of, it's a matter, you know, your time and how you stack up to other guys. And so, like, for me, when I look around, I'm like, well, I finished right next to Gebre Merriam, one of the best runners in the world, just won New York. And
right.
He's a 204 guy in my mind, you know. And so if I finish right with him, then in my mind, I also, if not a legit 204 guy, I at least have the potential to be a 204 guy. But really, I mean, let's think about how fast did I run 26 miles, and I don't care what kind of wind you have out there.
You still got
to
run.
You still have to run 26.3 miles at that pace, and it's not as easy as people, I think, would like to make it out to be.
You know what's so funny, Huddle? When it's sort of like somebody going whatever time they go. When you go 204.58,
yeah,
it's 204 and change, right?
Oh, for sure.
You know,
absolutely.
It's basically high 203s and change.
Someone says you ran 204, 204 what? You're like 204
and change. Of course.
Yeah.
You don't say 208.
No.
But when you were coming down that final stretch, right, and you saw the clock, I'm assuming you saw the clock, you must have been like, oh, my God. Did you write on your shoes beforehand that you were going to run 204?
Well, it's fine because we had these shoes that we had shipped around all over the country to different people in our steps community, people who were doing the very same thing I'm doing, you know, trying to fight poverty through running.
Right.
And they had all signed the shoes, and I was supposed to wear them in the Chicago Marathon. And so, you know, I thought, you know, I'm running a flat, fast course, and my goal was to run a 204 marathon. So I'd written 204 for the poor on the bottom of those shoes that I was wearing in the Boston Marathon. And I honestly wasn't really thinking about trying to run 204 at Boston going into the race, but sure enough, that ended up being a bit of a prophetic word, and that's exactly how it worked out. And yeah, I was hurting in that last mile. I remember seeing my split with a mile to go and thinking, like, basically I had two options. Like, I could just enjoy the last mile and run 205 something, or I was going to hurt really bad and try and get under 205, and I was like, and 204 sounds so much better than 205. So
and you,
I went to the well to try and get under that.
You knew Sarah would be giving you crap if you were waving to the crowd coming down the stretch, too.
Exactly.
Ryan, how do you strategize before race? So you seem to us to be one of these guys who's just like, you know what, this is what I'm going to run hard, and that's what I'm going to do, sort of that pre-mentality. But then you talk to, you know how it is, everyone armchair quarterbacks and sits there and goes, God, I wish he would just sit in, move to the back, get in the back of the pack, sit in. But it doesn't seem your style. But I think everyone loves how you race because it's so courageous, and especially at that level, you're almost in no man's land. Like you said, who knows if you're going to blow up and run the last 3 and 6 minutes. How do you decide how you're going to run, or are you just running the pretty much same way you run every single time out?
I don't really go into a race with much of a race strategy in mind. I mean, like, I feel like I've been racing ever since I was, you know, for the last 14 years, and so if I haven't learned how to race by now, then I should stop running altogether.
Yeah, bag it.
So I learned to, you know, trust my instincts, and also I try and use my faith and rely upon God out there and listen to him and try and be aware of what he's telling me to do at that moment. I think the best thing to do if you have been, if you're experienced and you've been at it for a while, is to go to a race with really open mind and multiple race strategy, so that if a guy takes off, it doesn't take you off guard because you're open to that, you know, or if it's slow, you're open to that, and so you can adjust on the fly. I find that for myself, when I have a preset, like this is exactly how the race is going to play out, I tend to get in trouble because it almost never plays out exactly how you think it's going to. So I like to just go into it with a really open mind, and I love the marathon distance, you know, and that's why, and I get so excited for these races when they come up, because they don't come up very often, and so when they do, I absolutely cannot stand to turn it into a half marathon or a 20-mile race or a 10K race because we just jog at the beginning of the race, and for me, too, like, I love taking part in historic races, and, you know, like, I was a part, you know, I was with the guy who ran 203 flat at 20 miles into the Boston Marathon, and I was very much a part of writing that story in, of right. this race that will go down out of the 115 years the Boston Marathon has been run as, yeah, I would say the greatest race maybe ever run on that course.
Did he thank you after the race?
Yeah, he did thank me numerous times at the press conference and stuff. I was like, that's nice of him, but if you really meant it, you'd share some of his bonus with me.
Make maybe a little donation to Hall Steps.
Exactly. Hey,
what the heck? A little something for the effort.
Yeah, that's right.
But, I mean, the cool part is, Ryan, you sort of do run like a Kenyan. I mean, because you're unpredictable. People don't know what you're going to do. And you're an entertainer out there, which is I think is part of the appeal for us, especially for Americans. We love people who are willing to lay it on the line. And here you are going through Wellesley, putting your hand to your ear, like, get louder. And your traditional guys would be like, oh, he's wasting energy. But there's something special about being on center stage. The whole world is watching Boston, and you know you're leading the Boston Marathon. I know you've led it before. You led it in 2009 and in last year as well. But there's something about leading through Wellesley and being on the biggest stage with all these people going crazy.
Oh yeah, like I just come to life. The Boston Marathon, New York City Marathon, Chicago, London, Berlin, all these marathons set these incredible stages for us to shine on and for us to get running into people's lives, into the public home. And that's opportunity to touch people and to inspire people and to show them how fun running can be. But, you know, maybe sometimes we don't always do the best job of that. And, you know, it's not always our fault. Running does hurt at times, and sometimes it's not just pure fun and feel like you're floating on clouds. But at the same time, like, I think we should show that you can have a good time running, and I do have a good time, and I'm not, you know, doing what I'm doing out there for other people. I'm doing it out there because that's me, you know.
Right.
Like, I love to – I'm a playful person, and yep. I love to just – have fun with people. And so when I'm out there running, even, you know, Sarah gave me a hard time about last year doing the airplane down the final stretch and being in third place. But, you know, like, well, one, I learned from that, didn't do that this year, and it worked out, but I redeemed myself there. But I don't know, like, I know that I do my best when I'm enjoying myself and having fun, and I even feel my body, like, relaxing when I, like, for example, I was, like, talking to the guy from Columbia.
Right.
When we were first starting the race, because his Garmin beeped at a K, and I looked over at him. I was like, "You have that thing set on K?" So I was like, "You're gonna be beeping like 42 times." But you know, it's just like, and when I talk, like, that loosens me up. You know, helps me relax too, and it's just fun.
Ryan, you are now experiencing something you've experienced before, and that is the rush of success, all the media attention, everyone celebrating what you did at Boston, and all, you know, you've experienced that before. But in Chicago, you had to withdraw due to fatigue, and you had just left your coach, Terrence, and correct me if I'm wrong, so I'll probably butcher it, Mahan or Mahone?
Yeah, Mahan.
And I'm sure there were a lot of people, and maybe you didn't read it, but a lot of doubters going, okay, what's big going mistake. On? Maybe he's blown success. It. He had all the success, and now he's going the other way. Did you feel that?
What was it like? It was out there, you know. Like, I don't read that stuff. I see off the message boards and all that stuff. But I knew that there's some of that going on. And for me, like, I know some people get really fired up by that stuff, and they use that as motivation when they're out on the road. But I really don't, and so I try and not even think about that. And I honestly, like, a lot of people came up to me after the race, and they're like, must feel really good to, like, quiet all the doubters and stuff like that. But honestly, because that's not a motivation for me, I didn't even really take any joy in if that did happen. That doesn't bring any satisfaction to me, because that's not why I'm out there running. And there will always be people doubting and criticizing and all that, but ultimately I'm not running to make them happy. So it really doesn't matter to me if they're happy about my running or if they're critiquing it, because, you know, I have a lot of relationships with people that I love and trust, and those are the people I let influence me, not everyone else.
How difficult was it going through that period? Because I don't believe you've had, you've had a relatively long career at a relatively young age, but you haven't had a really downstretch like that where...
Well, since college.
Yeah, since college, that you're owing to fatigue, which I think for a lot of athletes is a really ambiguous, not an injury, but an illness. You know, you're like, what's going on? Why am I in this hole right now?
Yeah, I mean, before I figured out the health issues that were going on there, it was a very difficult time for me, and I felt like I should just stop running. Like, I wasn't having fun anymore, and I wasn't able to finish workouts, and my motivation was getting worse, and just a downward spiral. And I can see how people let that stop them from running, and how they let that develop into a mental complex where they start doubting themselves, and then, you know, that makes it not much fun. And once I figured out that, you know, because I even had, like, people telling me, like, well, maybe you just don't, like, want it anymore, and, like, you're not, like, the same, like, person that you were back then, you know, and people I trusted tell me that. And so there was, you know, some, like, self-doubt there going on. But once I figured out that, hey, like, there's a reason why I'm feeling this way, whether, you know, even if it wasn't the parasite, like, what if it was just pure overtraining?
Right.
That once I backed down, once I let my body rest and recover, my body would come back around. So, you know, if people are going through that out there, they need to figure out there's something causing that. And even when I talk to, like, people who are going through tough times, like, my brother's gone through some tough times, I'm telling them, like, do not doubt yourself. Like, you are, it's not your, like, mental problem.
Right.
It's causing this. Like, there's something physical going on, because I know you love to run hard and push yourself and go at it. And there's no doubt in my mind that you're going to do the best with what you have. The problem is there's something that's not right in your body.
Well, and the way you guys train and race, you're on that red line. If you were just Jolly Jogger guy, you'd be, you know, you just get through it, and you go, okay, well, I'm feeling not quite right. I'll just go ride the bike for a little bit, or I'll do some other stuff. The thing, Ryan, that always impresses me about you, and in Huddle, I've been watching this stuff for so many years, I don't think I've ever seen, besides you, somebody who sort of gets dropped during a race. That happened in London, and then somehow comes back. And in Boston too. I mean, you at mile 15 or so, you were back a little bit, and then the next thing you know, you're back up there. Number one, I'm sure the other guys are like, I thought this guy was gone. What the hell's he doing back here? And how much confidence does it give you to, you know, to come back during the middle of a race?
Yeah, it's something that's happened to me a lot, and you know, really, I think I'm just thankful that I trained so much on my own in high school and when I was first starting out running, because I've learned to run well on my own, whether it's, you know, leading race and I feel like I'm out there on my own, or when I am, you know, dropped and trying to come back on guys. I have found a way to be comfortable running on my own and just put my head down. And I think a lot of that comes from mentally just thinking about what I'm doing, you know, like when I start worrying about how other guys are running or looking or feeling or the moves that they're making, then I get out of my own headspace and I'm thinking about their thoughts, not thinking about what's going on with me. And when I take care of myself and my own mind, then I know that I'm going to run the best I can, and ultimately, like, I can't control if a guy's in better shape than me and is going to get to the line before me, but I can control what I get out of myself on the day. And so when I'm on the starting line, my goal is to get everything out of myself that God's put in me, and I know that there's only so much that I can do to try and get to the finish line before other guys.
So when you do bridge, when you catch up to these guys, I think I was reading a quote somewhere that, you know, when you catch them, you don't want to just slow down and run with them. You want to maintain that momentum and just, you know, because it's harder it's easier to keep momentum than create it. So when you bridge back, you basically just want to go by those guys.
Yeah, that's something that I learned after, you know, a couple marathons like London. I caught up and I just sat back in with those guys.
Right.
And really, like, you're the one with all the momentum when you catch back up. So you got to just, as much as, like, it is tempting, and I have done it at times where I settle back in because you want to rest up.
Right.
But I think it's best to just go right by and just keep that momentum going. And then I find that, you know, when you do go by and you go to the front, I always get a surge of adrenaline and energy, and that enables me to run even quicker.
Knowing that you're an Ironman fan and knowing the way you look at this stuff, when you were watching Kona this last year and you saw Andreas Raylert catch up to Matt McCormick, you must have been thinking, don't stop. Don't run with this guy. Go right by this guy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, it's tough because I guess different guys have different styles as well.
Right.
But I think it's always good to just keep your momentum going.
Ryan, you've run some amazing times over the course of all distances, but we were looking at this, or at least I was looking at this really closely after seeing these times that you guys ran at Boston. That was the average pace per mile. And you ran 4:46 is what it averages out to. Obviously, because of the nature of the course, you're running faster or a little slower than that at times. But I looked then at your 10K and your 5K and your 15K, and I'm going, you know, marathon's a lot longer than any of those distances. So 15K, 4:26, 4:39 per mile. And you ran a marathon. You ran over twice that far at 4:46 per mile. And anybody out there in endurance land, most of them know, hey, you know, I ran in high school. I ran the mile. I ran in whatever, 4:50, 5-something. 4:46 for 26.2 miles.
It's ridiculous.
It's absolutely astounding. Do you look at that now and go, and I know every runner has an idea in their head, you know, in their fan, and maybe they don't share it with everybody, but what do you feel like, you've just done this, and maybe it hasn't sunk in, maybe it has, but you've looked at times and splits all your life. What do you feel like you're capable of? I mean, I mean that blows my mind. I mean, 4:31 per mile for your 10K, 4:16 per mile for your 5K, 4:39 for your 15K, and only another 6 seconds per mile, 7 seconds per mile for your marathon. I mean, that's astounding.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like to think too much about this sometimes.
That's a lot of stats, Huddle.
No, but these guys think about it. I know, you can't tell me that you haven't run along and you're calculating pace as you go, and you're looking at your watch and you're checking your per mile splits in workouts all the time.
Yeah, I mean, when I was out there in Boston, I was lucky that I only took one math class at Stanford, because I had no idea what I was on pace to run. I was just seeing my mile splits and knowing that I'd put together a lot of fast miles, but I hadn't added it all up, so I wasn't sure how quick I was going to be. But that's actually kind of a blessing in disguise.
Yeah, sure.
A good mathematician and a runner, because I think that's something the Kenyans have where, you know, like, I'm certainly been obsessed with the watch before, and I do enjoy, like, checking my splits and working all that out. Whereas I think the Kenyans, they just run.
They
you
just
know,
run.
And, like, they don't know if they go and doing 10 by a quarter in 58 seconds with a minute's rest. Like, they don't even know, like, you know, is that good? Or, like, they just go out there and they just run hard, you know. And I think that allows them maybe to break some mental barriers, because I know at times, like, I lay awake at night thinking about, like, what is possible in the marathon. I think about, like, you know, a 2-hour marathon and, you know, trying to double my half marathon time and run 4:33 per mile or something like that, and thinking that's, like, crazy, you know. But 4:46 pace would have seemed crazy to me, a couple years back or whatnot. So I think you could just have open mind and ultimately not think about it too much.
That's a lesson though, Babbitt, for all of us out there with our Garmins and our watches and our
all the rest
GPS
of it.
And the whole thing. It's like it's about running at the end of the day, and it's about running hard, right?
Absolutely.
So Ryan, when New York half wasn't that long ago, and you go 103.53 there, and you're 21st, and I'm sure a lot of people were thinking, that's not that fast. But you ran faster that in the half on Boston. You ran like 101 there. Did you feel that when you finished that New York race? Now we know you were going through you're dealing with the parasite. When you came out of that race, were you feeling, hey, that's pretty good considering how sick I've been? Or were you thinking, ooh, I got a lot of work to do before Boston?
I was bummed out after the race.
Were you?
Yeah, I was kind of laughing at myself because I just come out with this book called Running with Joy in here, and it's all about not having your circumstances dictate your joy in running. And here I was just finishing a half marathon and totally bummed out because I just run a crappy race. I was so bummed I actually walked back from the finish line to our hotel, which was 3 miles through New York. And but actually, by the time I got back to my hotel, I had my head screwed back on straight, and I was doing okay. But I was bummed because I'd actually had a couple good tempos after I had gotten through some of the stomach issues right before that race. 2 weeks before, I was totally fine, and had a couple good tempos, and ran significantly faster than I had run leading into the Houston half, where I ran 62 minutes. So I was thinking, I thought I'd definitely run 62, perhaps 61 or even 60 if I had a good day. But that was just not my day. I still don't totally understand it. I know there was, I was training hard, all that stuff, but that I was not feeling it in New York that day. And I was, honestly, in hindsight, I'd be like, oh yeah, I was totally fine. I thought, I'd bounce back and I'm fine, but I didn't know, going into Boston. That's why it was a real leap of faith for me to get out there as quick as I did that first half, because I didn't have a lot of confidence coming from my workouts because I was running all new courses that I'd run in previous years because I was in Flagstaff, not in Summit.
Right.
And so I couldn't compare the work I was doing, and it really wasn't until I came back to Stanford where I could run some familiar courses, and I was like, whoa, and I was starting to come around. I was like, oh, yeah, I am in really good shape. I just didn't even really know it, and for whatever reason didn't see it in New York. But I just learned from you just about when's the best time for me to come down from altitude, because I had come down from altitude about 2 or 3 days before the New York City half, and that's what I was planning to do in Boston, and I was still at altitude in the New York City half, and so I came down 2 weeks prior to the Boston Marathon, came to Stanford, trained here for 10 days, and then went out to Boston and felt night and day different. I don't think that was the only thing going on, but it certainly helped to figure that out.
Now, do you think with Mammoth, Mammoth is it's a tough place to train, and obviously you're up at altitude. Do you feel there's a point with altitude and maybe as high as Mammoth is that you can start substituting long stuff for speed and lose some of that speed? Do you feel like maybe so much time, you spent so much time at Mammoth that you lost a little speed and needed to get out of there?
Yeah, I felt like it was just getting to a point to where it was being pretty hard on my body.
Yeah.
Being up at altitude all the time. And even to some extent, I'm curious moving forward to experiment with more speed level training.
Yeah.
It certainly worked for some very good marathoners in the past. So curious to see how my body would respond, because I know that the long runs, the tempo runs, all that stuff, it comes back to me really quick. It's the mile repeats and the speed work that I really have to work at. So I think if I can improve on that weakness, I could definitely stand to run a quicker marathon.
With the trials coming up next year in January in Houston, I'm assuming you won't be running a marathon between now and then. What will you be? Will you be getting on the track a little bit and work on speed?
I'm certainly gonna be getting on the track and working on the speed work. I'm not sure actually if I'm in the fall marathon or not. I'm kind of torn right now because, like I was telling you guys, I love the marathon.
And, yeah.
Nothing gets me more excited to be on the starting line of a race than a marathon. So I don't know. I love to run a fall marathon. It's more of working out the recovery fall in
right.
Boston, see how I come off it and how I'm feeling. But regardless of whether or not I even do a fall marathon, the training will pretty much look the same, which is why I'm kind of tempted to do it, because it really wouldn't change a lot for me. I wouldn't have to really change much at all, except for, you know, maybe a 4-week period in there where I'd have to hit some marathon specific training. But for the most part, I know what I need to work on going forward, and it's certainly speed work. But I think I improved a lot from last year, obviously, and improved on being able to surge with guys. I worked on that a lot in my training. That was a big emphasis, and that seemed to pay off. So I'm pleased with the improvement that I'm seeing. But I know that there's a lot more room for that, because, you know, ultimately it does come down to speed. If you're running 4:46 for a mile for a marathon, you got to be able to be pretty comfortable at 4:30 pace, you know, or in 4:20 pace, and you got to be able to have the basic foot speed to run around 4 minutes for a mile. So I would love to get the wheels going a little bit.
Again, if you're listening to this on the radio, we're talking to Ryan Hall, America's fastest marathoner, just won the Boston Marathon.
Didn't win the Boston Marathon, but...
Well, he won it, as far as I'm concerned, for 204.58.
Yes, 204.58.
And he pretty much dragged everyone else through 20 miles.
Huddle,
I mean, he did all the work.
204 and change.
204 and change,
now,
I forgot.
Well, the one thing you did not ask, Huddle, was bench press.
Bench press, yeah. Okay. Well, that's the... We're talking about your size, and, you know, you look pretty muscular compared to those guys.
Absolutely.
Have you been working on the bench press these days? Is that sort of a result of that?
No, actually you'd be surprised. I am not very strong at all. I was doing some strength work with our strength trainer that we work with in Flagstaff, and one day he had me do 2 sets of 6 push-ups, and I don't usually complain about training, but I was complaining about that. And the next morning, I woke up, and I was all sore. I was like, I can't believe I just got sore from 12 push-ups.
And how much do you weigh, Ryan?
Like 135.
All right, so he's benching about 100, maybe a little more. I don't know. Pretty good. So, Ryan, are you a student of the sport? Do you look back at running history? Do you look at the eras of Alberto Salazar and, you know, all those guys? Do you look at all that stuff?
Yeah, I'm definitely. I love the history of our sport, and I think we have a very rich history, and
yep.
One that I'm proud of, and especially at the Boston Marathon. So yeah, like I watched that. I can't tell you how many times I've seen a YouTube video of the Duel in the Sun. That thing gets me fired up. So yeah, I love studying the sport in that way. But I'm also a little bit blissfully ignorant of the present, in terms of, you know, I don't like to blow guys up in my head and, you know, like be checking the results of every single race. And
right.
I don't like get on Let's Run, and I'm not like really aware of what other people are doing on purpose, because I don't want to. I want to have a healthy respect for people and a love for people, but I don't want to be afraid of competitors. So, I like to look at the past more than I look at what's going on around me.
Yeah, don't have to worry about Dixon surging on you.
Exactly.
Well, one of the things I'm interested in is when you look at the past, and I look at, for example, Henry Rono, Tom Hunt, Alberto Salazar, when I look at the runners of past eras and when they set their records, a lot of them caught fire, you know, particularly on the track, and we're talking shorter distances at probably, you know, a lot higher intensity, and it's the reason it happened this way, but they set those records within a pretty short span of time, and I'm sure at the time they felt completely indestructible and like it would go on forever. And then you have someone like Haile Gebrselassie, who's had just this ridiculously long career, and you strike me more as one of those guys who has a long career. Do you look at that and or worry about it and or look at a performance that you just had at Boston and go, dude, I am on fire. I need to strike while the iron's hot.
I better find something
yeah,
else.
I gotta move on to the next thing.
I'm actually like really struggling with that right now because I want to just go run and I want to race next week. I'm really fired up. But
Huddle can get you into the Encinitas Triathlon. Huddle's got a spot for you in the Encinitas Triathlon.
Well, there's a 5K as well. Encinitas 5K would be good. That'd be good for you.
He's got some big appearance money. Big.
So it does, you do look at it, but do you, I mean, obviously you didn't feel like that after Chicago, and I'm sure your coach would sit there and look at you and go, guess what, pal, you're not racing next weekend.
Yeah, I was concerned with my career and the longevity of it and the future going forward with that. After dropping out of Chicago, but you know, once we figured out the health issues, that helped a lot. I feel really confident moving forward because finally, for the first time in my career, I'm learning to rest. I'm learning the importance of that and listening to my body. And I hope that I've mastered this lesson that I've learned and will continue to learn that sometimes less is more, you know.
Yes,
and
it is.
Learning to space out my workouts more and take more recovery days. And, you know, this was the first time ever for me that I took one day off every single week for the entire marathon buildup, regardless of how I was feeling or what was going on. I always took one day completely off, no running, no cross training, no weights, nothing, just complete rest. And that was a really healthy thing for me to do. And that was actually, you know, partially it was inspired by my faith in the Bible, but also, you know, a guy like Bernard Lagat, I know he's done that throughout his career. And I look at the longevity of his career and I'm like, man, I've been watching him on TV since I was like a little kid, you know, since I first got into this sport, and he's still going. So if it worked for him, obviously there's something to it. So I'm confident that if I can continue to be smart and rest, even when I don't feel like it, like right now, I'm going to have a long and fun career.
You know what it is, Bev? He's getting old. He's 28. What are you, 28 now?
Yeah, I'm 28.
Wow. He's becoming wise with all that age.
I've got socks over him.
You do have socks. Yeah, just,
I've got socks
stop
older
wearing
him.
Them.
Yeah. So, Ryan, with the trials being in Houston, and you've had, obviously, 59-43, you've had a lot of success down there. Are you pretty excited about it? What do you think about the course?
Oh, yeah, I'm really excited about it. I can picture it right now, and I can, you know, put myself there, and I felt really good there when we ran the half marathon in January, even though, you know, we didn't run particularly quick or anything, but it felt, I loved the way that the course just rolled. I'm not rolled as in hilly, but I mean, there's very, very slight ups and downs. Like, I mean, if you just thought, you'd say it's pancake flat, but it does, it kind of makes you use different muscles at points, which I like, and I think can really help you throughout a marathon. I just really like the feel of it. I love the city, and I've had nothing but good memories from Houston. So, you know, when I think about it, and honestly, I'm just really excited to run a flat, fast course because, you know, even though I did get the time on Monday at Boston, and that, for me, takes, you know, a bit of the pressure off me now because, you know, I love to run quick and go after your fast times, and now I kind of have that under my belt. I kind of have that card. Not that I wouldn't like to run faster. I'd love to, but, you know, in the meantime, 204 is not too shabby. So I'm excited, though, to get back on a flat, fast course and see what I can do and do it at the Olympic trials. I think would be really special. And, you know, I know that it's going to take a really good day to make that team, and I have a ton of respect for all of the American distance runners out there. And, you know, in New York, I was beaten by a whole bunch of those guys. So I'm in no way taking anyone lightly out there. And I know it's going to take a heck of a day and heck of a preparation period to be ready for it, but it's a challenge that I'm excited about. And I think it's the perfect place for us to try and make the Olympic team.
So Ryan, when you're coming down that finish and you know Sarah's waiting, and that's, you know, for the last couple of years, just her being at the finish line and you guys embracing at the finish, there's got to be something pretty special to that, knowing just that consistency and knowing how much you both invest into the charity, into the event. And when you have a performance like that, just like Lance, the bigger the podium for Lance, the more donations came into his charity. And for you, being on center stage at really one of the most important marathons in the world and performing the way you did has to help Hall Steps, and for you and Sarah has to be a pretty special moment.
Yeah, it is really special because, you know, the whole time I'm out there running, you know, oftentimes my thoughts drift back to Sarah and to a lot of the people. I actually love to do that when I see the cameras in front of us and I'm looking into the camera. I'm thinking about Sarah watching me on TV. I'm thinking about my little brother watching me on TV, my parents, and all the people on my team, whether it's my weight coach or my massage therapist or the guy who does ART on me in Phoenix, or there's my doctor. All these people have been, they're with me out there. I'm carrying with me out there. So when I get to that finish line and I finally get to join the rest of my team and, you know, and see Sarah especially, like, she has been with me. She's dragged me out of bed literally when I couldn't get up on my own strength, you know. So it's pretty special. I feel like she deserves it as much as I do, you know. She's been out there as well.
Excuse me, Ryan. Hold up 1 sec. Is your phone? Or is your? It sounds like you're losing connection with your phone. I don't know if you're on a cordless or.
Oh, sorry.
That's all right.
I'm on my cell, but some. Did I lose you guys?
Okay. Go ahead. Sorry, I'm sorry to interrupt. We couldn't hear some of that.
The most emotional time huddle. Yeah. Nice. That was good.
No, I mean we could. I mean it was in and out. Could you hear it? I couldn't hear it.
Yeah, I got it. Ryan, again with. And Sarah's been running so well too. So for the two of you to, you know, a lot of times when you're two world-class athletes, usually one is on and the other one isn't. And that's sort of a tough balance. But both of you guys are running so well right now.
Yeah. I mean, watching her do well, even, you know, before Boston, I was telling people, I was like, the move that we made, I was glad that we made it just for the fact that Sarah's running as well as she did, you know, like I wouldn't trade that for anything. Even if things didn't work out for me as well as they did on Monday, I'd still be confident in our move just because just to see her come to life and, you know, to see her here at Stanford, where I call this like her happy place because
right.
I mean, not that I don't love Stanford, I do, but this is Sarah, you know, like this is where she comes to life. For me, it's more like the mountains and I love that team, but for her, it's Stanford, and just to see her shine out on the track again and see her progress has been really fun for me, and I feel like when she's successful, I feel like I'm successful, and I'm sure she feels the same way about my success when I'm out there running.
And Ryan, after you finished, and I think it was 2008, when you finished fifth in London, 206.17, you came back from London to watch Boston. And I'm assuming that was one of the first times you had an opportunity to really watch that race from the inside out. When you watched that race, is that when you thought, this is where I need to be. This is the place where I need to really perform.
Yeah, I was so excited that weekend. I was watching the marathon. You know, I got to be on the lead vehicle and just see the crowd and just to finally see it in person. You know, I'd read about it and seen YouTube videos about it and heard about it my whole life. And when you think about like a race that has history, you think of the Boston Marathon, you know? And so every time I'm not done starting line now, like I'm telling you, I feel like I'm like writing history. And that's pretty cool feeling.
Well, you just did write history.
Yeah,
204.58, the fastest ever marathon for an American. That's pretty nice to put that on the business card. Fastest American marathoner ever.
204 and change.
204 and change. Yeah, don't even put that the 58 thing on there. It's immaterial.
Doesn't matter.
And
doesn't
change
count.
Is good. Ryan, thank you so much for taking
for
on a Saturday afternoon. I figured you probably weren't going out running, so this might be a good time to chat.
Yes, this is good. Took my mind off the run for a little bit anyways.
Perfect. Ryan, when are you going to grow that beard again? Is that coming back next winter?
Oh, yeah. Big time.
I don't know. You know, that thing was, it took like 3 months to get it that long, so I don't know if I can I'm a guy that, like, I like to go for broke, and so if I'm going to do something, I go all out at it. And so if I did it, I'd have to have a nice stretch of, like, not many media obligations for, like, 6 months.
So you can grow it again till the Endurance Live.
Yeah. I noticed you didn't consider Endurance Live a media obligation.
No. He knew we would dig that. He knew
it
at Durst Live.
That my opportunity to show it to the world.
Exactly. And you did, and you showed the world a lot this last Monday.
Great.
Hey, Ryan, thanks. And please give our best to Sarah. Yes. And congratulations on an amazing, amazing race.
Will do. Thanks, guys.